I haven't really woken up. Oh, until I've had my McDonald's breakfast deal. And I know this is true because before breakfast, I put my phone in the refrigerator and couldn't find the keys that were already in my hand.
Nothing gets the morning going like the first sip of an iced coffee. Get any size and any flavor for 99 cents until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's, I'm loving it.
Hi, I'm John Bearer, the host and lead researcher for Stories of Sacrifice, American POW MIA podcast, and the U.S. POW MIA Family Locating, a free forensic genealogy public service I provide to support POW MIA families trying to get their loved one identified and brought home. First, I want to thank you, our listeners, for your interest in the Stories of Sacrifice podcast. Our goal with the podcast is to tell the world about the sacrifice these brave heroes gave for the freedoms we enjoy every day. They gave our country their last full measure. They give us their tomorrow for our freedom today. Second, we would like to raise public awareness that thousands of these heroes from World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and the Cold War have still not yet been found or returned to the United States, with many still buried as unknowns in our own national cemeteries. Their families still waiting for our government to disinter and identify them. So what can you do to support this important mission? First, if you are a relative of a missing in action service member, you can visit the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency website for more information about providing a family reference DNA sample. If you want more information, you can also contact me at john@uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Even if you're not related to an MIA, you can contact your members of Congress to request they allocate enough funding to support the POW MIA mission and to change the DPAA policy to a DNA lead process and create additional public partnerships to disinter and process the remains for those that are buried as unknown. You can also help us in our mission by sharing these podcast stories with your friends, family, and consider sharing them on your own social media. We would also appreciate if you could leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. You can also visit www.storiesofsacrifice.org and leave us a review there. You can visit our affiliate links on our website where we will earn a small commission on your purchases and no extra cost to you. If you feel moved to do so, please visit our donation links on our website to help us continue this important mission. Just sharing these stories helps us greatly, and we cannot thank you enough for listening. Sit back and relax, and we hope you enjoy today's show. Welcome to Stories of Sacrifice, World War II American POW MIAs in the Philippines. This is a production of the U.S. POW MIA Family Locating. I'm your host and lead researcher, John Bearer. Over 75,000 service members are still listed as missing in action from World War II. Of those, over 30,000 are currently listed as active pursuit by the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency. Active pursuit meaning they could possibly be identified with the proper family reference sample DNA being on file with the Armed Forces DNA Identification Laboratory at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. The process of donating DNA reference material is easy, painless, and free of charge. If you are the relative of a missing service member, you can contact the Service Casualty Office of the MIA for information on how to provide a DNA sample. The Service Casualty Office will mail to your home a DNA donor kit that contains a donor consent form, instruction form, 3 cheek swabs, and a shipping envelope. All you have to do is fill out the paperwork, rub the inside of your cheek with the swabs, place the swabs back into the containers, and affix the label. The collected samples are then placed in a pre-addressed and prepaid envelope and then mailed to the Armed Forces DNA Identification Lab at Dover. That's it. It's a completely painless process. To get more information about your missing in action relative, you can visit our website, uspowmiafamilylocating.com, and we can help you to determine if your relative is currently listed on the DPAA active pursuit list and the next steps to help get them identified. Just visit our website or email john@uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Hi, I'm here today with the author of the book, Sweet Land Liberty, One Man's Story of His Time as a Japanese POW in World War II. I have author Timothy L. Porter on the phone today. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me.
So you wrote the book, Sweet Land of Liberty, One Man's Story of His Time as a Japanese POW in World War II. I saw that you used transcripts from a memoir that who wrote this book, or who wrote the memoirs?
It was Talmadge A. Smithy from Huntsville, Alabama, that wrote the memoir. He was, at one point, he was enrolled as a student in 1949 at the University of South Carolina, and he typed up his memoir. He must have done it for a research paper or you know, some kind of paper at the school. When he passed away in 1999, he was actually dating a lady, and a few years later, his great nephew Scotty Smithy, which I'm friends with, and brought this to my attention, stopped by and gave him a envelope with this transcript in it, and he's had it for years, 15 plus years, he said, and just has never found anybody to, you know, publish it for a book.
So how did you get involved with actually writing the book? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a physical education teacher at Madison County Elementary School in Gurley, Alabama. I've been there since 04, 05. At the time, Scotty was working as a janitor there, maintenance. And, you know, we just friended one another. You know, he worked in my area down by the gym, helping me with the gym and locker rooms and all that. And, you know, we talked hunting, talking football, talking guy stuff. And I don't know how it even come about, but we started talking about his transcripts that he had written. I said, well, I just offered. I said, hey, let me make a couple calls here. I know some people, and let me see what I can find out. I made a couple calls. Well, before I know it, things were just, you know, going pretty steady. And I told him I'd get back with him and see what we can find out. And before I knew it, you know, we're working on publishing this book of his uncle that was in World War II and been passed away since 1999. I worked with Tom Malia from Minnesota. He assisted with the editing and transcript and format of the book. I want to thank him also, and I didn't mention it earlier, but I really want to thank Scotty for allowing me to be a part of this. We started last February, starting of the book. You know, we communicated, Tom and I communicated on a regular basis, and actually we're friends now. We talk pretty consistent once or twice a month, and, you know, I picked out this cover for the book, with the soldier, you know, saluting the flag. Through the process, you know, Scotty and I always communicated. Before we made any decision, you know, I always went through him before we finalized anything. And in October, I believe, you know, is when we finished up the book. You know, it's on Amazon right now. You can order it. It was a fun and interesting process, just learning how to publish a book. Was very intriguing, very educational. I would never thought I'd be a part of something special like this.
So this was your first book then, I take it?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it was my very first book. And I mean, it's very interesting to the fact that I would be interested to do another one. You know, it was very a big accomplishment for myself. I know Scotty, it means a lot to him and his family. Pretty special.
Yeah. What can you tell us about Mr. Smithy? You know, his pre-military history. What do you know there?
Well, you know, it's funny. I never met the man, but I feel like I know him after this process. You know, Scotty and I talked a lot about him. He mentioned, you know, Scotty thought a lot of his Uncle Talmadge. There's some things that we talked about. You know, he would go over there a lot. He'd ride with him on the tractor when he was doing his gardening. Or they would sit out in the chairs in the driveway, he said. His Uncle Talmadge would tell him, you know, some more stories or whatever, but he wouldn't get in depth on it, you know. Scotty, he remembered that. Scotty was young when he used to go over there. He used to ride to the arsenal here in Huntsville. You know, they'd go out there to get groceries and things out to the arsenal. He'd ride out there with him, always walking the river, you know, going squirrel hunting and doing things like that. He remembers.
Talmadge, he was assigned then to went into the Navy. Do you know when he enlisted?
And let me mention a couple other things about Talmadge before we get into that. There's some other things I didn't mention prior.
Yeah, please do.
Something that Scotty said that, you know, Talmadge never owned a TV. Never owned a TV, but he would listen to Paul Harvey every day at noon. He remembered that. That's something that always stood out. He always did, you know, he was a carpenter, so he built furniture, sold it. You know, when he retired from the Navy, he did a lot of that on the side to, you know, make money. In his garage, he would make furniture for people and sell it. He made his own furniture. He made his own boat to go fishing in. And we have pictures of it in the book, in the back of the book. And also the picture of the house he lived in, he actually built that house himself.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, very smart human being. And he could do a lot of things. You know, he was a carpenter on his boat. So he had a lot of responsibilities, had to do a lot of things. And he never was married, never got married, but Scotty said he was a ladies' man. So I had to throw that out there.
Yeah, you were talking about he had that girlfriend up until he passed away there.
Yeah, and he also, he pointed out he had about 12 dogs, I guess. I mean, he loved dogs, whatever. He had a bunch of dogs. And every time a dog passed away, he would stand over the dog and say a prayer in German over the dog. He said he would remember that.
So was he a German, you know, from German ancestry?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he did that. And then there's a school over here, Riverton Elementary School, that has a old bell from Bell Factory that was given to him. And he actually did the foundation framework, whatever, for the bricks where it is to this day. The man could do a lot of things. He said he also was he could do tree work too. He was a great, you know, cutting trees down and doing things like that.
Wow. When did he enlist in the Navy?
Let's see. He enlisted in the Navy in October 5th of 1931.
Oh, wow. So he'd been in there quite a while before the Philippines was even attacked.
Oh, yeah. Yes. He was enlisted, and, you know, he went to the recruiting station in Birmingham at that time. And he was in there since 1931, and he ended up retiring. Retired midnight June 30th, 1963. So he was in the military, I mean, his whole life, and then he come back and retired. And, you know, like I said, he did his furniture work and tree work and stuff like that. Now, he was an inspector of naval material in Minneapolis, Minnesota from 58 to 63.
Oh, okay.
And that's where he was at last.
Well, what can you tell us about the Philippines? I know he was on the USS campus in the Manila Bay on December 7th when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. It was like 8 hours later that they, you know, the Japanese came in and invaded the Philippines where they first started with bombing runs. And they would actually have attacked the Philippines, you know, within hours of Pearl Harbor, but they were kind of fogged in and they had to wait until the fog lifted before the Japanese could take off and actually do the bombing raids on the Philippines.
Yeah, they were there. And he pointed out that, you know, at that time, you know, the Japanese were really, you know, with the Filipinos to surrender, dropping pamphlets from airplanes and broadcasting on the Japanese radio you know, MacArthur has left the Philippines and there is no one left to protect you now, you know, and, you know, photos of beautiful girls offering a kiss, things like that. He pointed out in the book at the time when that all happened after Pearl Harbor.
So was his time aboard the USS Campus. Now, was he there on the day that it was actually bombed by the Japanese? I know it was bombed and damaged.
He was in Manila Bay. That's where he was anchored at the time. That's where he was at.
Okay. They ended up scuttling that ship later on, you know, during the Battle of Bataan. They ended up scuttling that ship, and I think he ended up on Corregidor Island.
He did. And, you know, they pointed out, you know, at that time, you know, they were moved along to different camps at the time. And, you know, some of the things that he pointed out, you know, the Japanese really at times utilized them to do things, you know, like for bridges and for roads and to do all the work, you know. They also, you know, tried to get them, you know, with their engineering, you know, carpentry and anything like that. Because some of them didn't know what to do. The Japanese didn't know how to, you know, they thought they wanted to find out what they thought that would work the Americans. So they'd always try and get their opinion of things.
Yeah. So he ended up, you know, they took him. I know when Corregidor surrendered in May of 42, they took him to those POWs. They took to Manila and then up to campus, and then they ended up over, I don't know if they, you know, got to O'Donnell or if they were just taken straight to Camp Cabatatuan. And that's kind of where they had those, a lot of those POW details that you're talking about, where they used them on road building, you know, reworking airport or airstrips and things like that. Did he specifically talk about any of the details that he was on, or he just mentioned just basically the details that everybody did?
Well, he mentioned a lot of prisoners what I can recall here, that there's a lot of issues with translation, right, when they're trying to figure out. And that's what came about with all the prisoners, where there was a lot of beatings and, you know, getting beaten up or brutally, you know, broken bones and things like that.
Did he ever get?
He mentioned that a lot.
Did he ever get beaten or anything like that? Did he mention if he was a part of that? You know, being
he did not mention that. He did not.
So while he was in the Philippines, then he you know, it sounds like he was on a few of these details, his POW work details.
Yeah, when they, one thing he did point out, I remember this, when they were transferred, I'm going ahead a little bit here, but when
we don't want to give away all the information in the book.
No, I will say this, that when he was transferred to Japan, they took, like he said, 500 men they had to strip down. That's what he said. And they picked the 300 out of the 500 to go to Japan. And he was one of them. They didn't know what was going to happen. Nothing was told. But they were all, I won't say excited, but they were looking forward to getting out of there because of the situation they were in, the stench, the bed, the, you know, infestation of bed bugs and the diseases where they're at, the mud, the rain. You know, they were ready to take that chance to go wherever.
Yeah, Camp Cabatatuan was in really rough shape. There was hundreds of men's, you know, tens of men's dying every day. You know, they had these burial detail parties where they'd end up having to take, you know, in a 24-hour period, there's probably, you know, it depends on which month that they were at the camp. But, you know, there was, you know, 50, 60 men dying every day in a lot of cases. And, you know, the malaria and dysentery was rampant throughout the camps, and, you know, the mosquitoes, there was no way to protect themselves.
No, there wasn't. You know, they're laying on to sleep on, you know, bamboo flats. I mean, like you said, daily death all the time. And there was one story in here that he mentioned they were doing a burial. You know, they would put the dead bodies stacked on one another in a building. So they were moving them to put them in their grave. One of the men started moving their fingers. Come to find out, they figured he was in a coma or something. and the guy actually ended up living. I mean, he was alive.
Yeah, well, that's crazy.
You know, just the experiences, you know, that he met, you know, it's just, I mean, I can even imagine going through this period of time that he was a prisoner of war and witnessing, and, you know, your friends and your are dying at that. I mean, you just don't know if it's your turn or what, you know, if you say something wrong or you look at them or, you know, they just didn't know.
Yeah,
something would happen to them on top of the diseases and all that, you know.
Yeah, and I can understand why the POWs wanted to get out of those camps, you know, and how, you know, he thought maybe getting on that hell ship and going to Japan might have been a better option. But in many cases, when they ended up in Japan, or the trip to Japan was hell in itself. For many of these POWs, a lot of these, you know, hell ships is what the POWs called them, as hell ships. A lot of these ships were actually, they weren't marked with a Red Cross emblem on them. So the Allied forces were attacking these transport ships thinking it was just Japanese transports, when actually it was POWs on them. And there's a lot of these ships that didn't make it. I think there was over 2,000 American POWs, you know, that were killed just on these hell ships alone.
And that's the thing. I mean, there's so many, and people don't understand, you know, don't hear about all that, you know, about the ships not being, you know, being bound. And, you know, in history, a lot of people don't know that, you know, what actually happened, and reading what Talmadge is.
My first plan to spice up the NFL season was to add man-eating tigers to the game. We lost a lot of great players that day, and that was my bad. Now I'm bringing you the Caesars Sportsbook app. It's got live in-game betting, parlays, and Caesars rewards, people. It's even better than Tiger Ball.
Must be 18. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
Right there, it just makes you, you know, think about things differently, you know, what he went through and what they were going through at the time. You know, even, I think, I don't know if you said it, but even submarine attacks and, on the ships also. So
it was crazy.
A bad situation.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was crazy, bad situation.
A lot of times when these ships were attacked or whatever, the POWs either, you know, they were down in these ship holds, you know, down in there in the darkness, the lids were closed, you know, the people, they couldn't get out. In many cases, they couldn't get out when the ship was going down. And in some cases, those that did make it out of the ship, when they were in the water, you know, tried to swim toward shore or swimming toward, you know, another ship that was in the area, they were attacked, and in a lot of cases, they were shot and everything else by these other men on ships. And it was just a crazy, crazy situation, you know. And if they made it to shore, you know, they were treated real harshly as well. So, but it sounds like he actually made it, you know, actually made it to Japan.
He mentioned too, like, you know, a couple of doctors come on the ship, and they basically looked at him, took a few pulses, and walked out. You know, that's all that's all it was, you know. Check some pulses, and they left. They didn't check on, you know, if anything was wrong with them, if they had any diseases, they're sick or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think they really cared. You know, they wanted was warm bodies to do slave labor in these Japanese camps.
He mentioned too, you know, one of the times that one of the prisoners, he stole like three peppers or something. You know, I think it's three peppers or something like that. They had them stand out in the sun a lot, you know, it was really hot, and with their bald, you know, with their heads out there, and get sunburned real bad. I think it was 30 of the soldiers walked by and hit them in the back with their guns, you know, walk by and take their turn, hit them, knock them down, they get back up and hit them again. You know, everybody took a turn.
Man, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
How they were treated.
It just makes you you know, appreciate things more when you read things like this, what they did, you know, obviously the greatest generation ever of all time, you know, that served our country.
Yeah. They answered the call.
They did. And, you know, my grandfather, Casey Jencott, he was in the Philippines also, 41st Infantry. My step grandfather, Frank Prinky, which he's 96, he's still alive. He was in Europe. There's a little, incentive, I guess, history for me to do such a project like this and be a part of something special. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, exactly. It means a lot to me. So he made it to Japan, and he ended up in one of the Japanese prison camps there. Did he mention much about the camps in Japan?
He talked about when they were in the, and I can't remember what part it was, if it was in Japan or they're going to Japan, like they're thrown in these trains, whatever, that stacked, you know, there's wood in there. So yeah. They just threw them in there to get them to where they need them to be. Right. And, you know, the one thing he did point out that the Filipinos there at the island were really nice to him. You know, they would try and sneak him food and stuff when they were going from one place to another.
Yeah, the Filipino people took it upon themselves to try to help the Americans and the other Filipino POWs. Yeah, they would throw them food and try to sneak them quinine medicine and stuff for the malaria. And there was a lot of these Filipino civilians that actually were murdered by the Japanese for trying to support the Americans and the Filipino forces when they were in the camps. It was crazy. When was he, do you know when he was liberated from the POW camps there in Japan? You know, can you tell us anything about the liberation or any time around that?
September 4th, 1945, he was liberated from a Japanese prisoner of war camp. He reported the American forces at Yokohama, Japan, spent the night at the hospital ship.
Yeah, so they put him out back on these American hospital ships, and yeah. I know in many cases they actually went back to the Philippines. You know, they were sent back to the Philippines to Manila, and they spent, I don't know if it was a few days or a few weeks there in Manila before they were sent back to the United States.
Yeah, it says here, en route, he's liberated September 4th, September 6th through September 13th. He was en route to Memphis, Tennessee, found released from prison camp. He was a prisoner of war for 3 years and 4 months. When he was released from captivity, he held the rank of warrant officer.
Oh, wow. So he'd been promoted. Then during that time that he was a POW, he was, or probably pre-surrender, he probably got promoted.
Right.
And then held that rank of warrant officer throughout the being his captivity. And of course, since being enlisted since 1931, I can imagine he would be up at that high of a rank.
32 years.
Yeah. That's an amazing career, especially having to go through what he went through, wars, going through World War II and then also Korea.
Yeah, that's right. This was interesting to me. He was there for maybe a month or so, but he was anti-submarine warfare at school in Key West as a commanding officer, executive officer there in 1954.
So it sounds like he got some pretty nice duty stations after the war.
Yeah, and I mean, he was in Iceland too, Defense Forces. Well, it was about a little over a year, October 25th, 55 to December 5th, 1956.
Yeah, that was, the Cold War era. You know, a lot of it was Cold War area, where we were trying to keep the Soviets out of the Arctic.
And, there's, in the book also, there's, his military awards that he has. There's also, it's hard to read, and we did the best we could with what we had. I would love to be able to find the original, but he returned to the Philippines 40 years later, and I couldn't, read the article too much, but in the Huntsville Times, they did an article on that also.
Oh, wow. So after he was liberated and after he spent all those years in the service, he came back home, and we kind of touched on it earlier where, he basically a carpenter and a ladies man and never did marry. And what else?
And listen to Paul Harvey.
And listen to Paul Harvey. Good day.
Absolutely. So, it's pretty interesting to do the research. And, like I said, I feel like I know Talmadge. I never met the man, but I feel like I know him, and Scotty allowed me to be a part of this, reading Talmadge's story has humbled me, myself, of appreciation of what we have here in America for people like himself for going to service for our country for all those years and doing what he did. My grandfather, my step-grandfather, my neighbor, he was in World War II also. And my neighbor Bill that lives right next to me, he was in the Vietnam War. So I've always had a deep appreciation of the military and what they've done.
Yeah. So anybody interested in buying or getting a copy of the book, how can they go about it?
Well, it's, you know, you can get on Amazon under Sweet Land of Liberty. It's on there right now. You can order it. You can also, if you want to read it on Kindle, it's available on Kindle also.
Yeah, and I'll make sure I'll put those links in the show notes. So all the listeners have to do is just click the link and it'll take them right to the Amazon page.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, can anybody request any signed copies from you, and how would they get a hold of it?
There's a couple ways they can contact me. I'll be ordering more books the end of January. There's a couple ways. I have an Instagram account that is, it's one word. There's no space or anything. Sweetlandofliberty.ww2. They wouldn't let me use the capital I's for that. I don't know why it wouldn't, but sweetlandofliberty.ww2. I also just finish up with a Facebook, Sweet Land of Liberty, WW2 with the, you know, capital I's. And Sweet Land of Liberty, all that, the first letters are capital on that.
Okay. And I'll also link all those in the show notes too. So all our listeners can go back and look into there. And if they want a signed copy, they can just click a link and get in touch with you. And they can, you know, make arrangements between you and them, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm, you know, give me 24 hours. I'm pretty quick at, you know, getting back to you. I actually, you know, I gave a seventh grader, he's a big history kid, and he read it one day and he really enjoyed it. I just gave it to him the other day. I think it's important for our youth, our younger generation, to read these types of books and understand more about the history.
Oh, I agree.
Of the people that served for our country. You know, I think that's, to me, being is overlooked. To me, that's my opinion. I might be wrong, but I think it's important for our youth to read books like this and understand what they sacrificed for.
Yeah, I do too. You know, my daughter's a senior in high school this year, and you know, when I talked to her about the Philippines and, you know, a lot of the World War II stuff, you know, there's not a lot of focus on the Pacific campaign. A lot of it's on the European front, you know, and D-Day and things like that. But, yeah, they don't cover much of this in American history anymore. It's kind of sad.
It is, you know, I guess it's our responsibility, hopefully, you know, to promote it. And our librarian, which she's on Instagram, Pam Berry, she's was the very first person to order the book. So I have to give her a little shout out to her. And she was very supportive of me. You know, she kind of knew of the book was in process. So she was, you know, she was our very first person to order the book. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah. I take it was ordered and put in the school library.
Yeah. I have given her one for the library. That was her personal one. And she made it. She made me sign it. That was weird. Hey, you want to sign my book? You want to sign? I'm like, what? She goes, you're going to sign that. I'm like, she's like, I have everyone sign my book. I'm like, that's just weird for you to say, you need to sign your book. I'm like, that was just odd, but it was funny. You know, we made it fun. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's all a part of the process. So is there anything else you want to tell us about the book or any thoughts you might have?
There's also Talmadge also, I forgot about this part. There's just so much information out. We can talk for a couple hours, actually, and I don't want to give away too much of the book so people enjoy reading it. But
the whole goal is for them to get a copy of this thing,
yeah,
and, you know, sit down and read it, share it with their children and grandchildren.
Yeah, that's like talking about Star Wars movie. We can't do that, right? I mean, we can't talk about Star Wars. We give it away, you know.
Oh, I just went and watched
same thing with the book.
I just went and watched 1917 last night at the theater. It was pretty good. But go ahead.
Oh, was it good?
Yeah, it was good.
Oh yeah.
But yeah,
man, I gotta go see that one.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll go on with your thoughts there. I'm sorry for the interrupt.
No. One thing is, Talmadge did have a relative. It was his grandfather. His grandfather, Bradford Washington Smithy, Tink, they called him, his nickname. He was in the Civil War. That's one thing I did forget to mention earlier, is that he did have a relative, and he had several siblings. I mean, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 other siblings. So, you know, he had a big family, and his one sister, she was very, she put their whole family history into books. That was interesting. Scotty told me about that also, that she put the whole family going back beyond the Civil War era.
So
family tree.
Sounds like she's the family historian, so to speak. Yeah, that's kind of like I am.
Yeah.
I do all the genealogy and tracing our ancestors way back. Yeah, that's real cool.
And she actually traveled around. She was in education. She was a teacher. She traveled all over to do. She taught. So.
Okay. Well, anything else you want to add to the conversation?
No, I just want to say also, I just want to say this. I've been thinking about it a lot. And if there's any veterans, family members with veterans, or that have an interest of having a book published, I would be more than glad to be a part of that process. If they want to contact me, message me, I can call them or whatever. I just think it's very important for us to have this information out to, you know, this is history, you know, and they're not getting any younger, you know. So I think it's very important if we can do this, and I would help that process if someone would like to do that.
Yeah, I'm giving your putting your name out there. You know, there's quite a few of these families that I work with, and I know one family for sure is, you know, interested in it, and that'd be awesome if more families would take part in writing the, you know, their loved ones' history. You know, in the service and the sacrifice that they made for our country, you know, that'd be awesome.
And Scotty, you know, the money's irrelevant, you know, to me. It's just getting this information out, paying for the process. That's what he did. And, you know, here we are, you know, doing a podcast. Whoever thought that, you know, I never thought, hey, you know, doing this book, I would be doing a podcast about a book that we published, you know, which is very special. But I just want to mention that to people. If there's any interest, I would be more than happy to be a part of that process.
Yeah, it should be getting a lot more interest than a podcast. It should be getting news articles and everything else written about it, you know, about these guys of service. You know,
well,
it's amazing
thing.
History.
That's the thing. Well, and, you know, I really think this is like, you know, how Talmadge wrote this book. I mean, there's so many, you know, he did such a great job of his memoir, you know, his notes and whatever he, you know, he put together here. You know, he wrote this in 1949. So you think about it, it was fresh in his mind still, you know.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it was really always fresh in his mind, realistically, but this was not far after, you know, in time that it happened.
I'm sure it was a way for him to heal from the stress and the struggles that he went through.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure absolutely. It was very therapeutic for him to write it.
No, I want to thank you, John, for having me on to be able to talk about this book. And Talmadge himself, the family, Scotty and his family, you know, being a part of that. And I'm just very blessed to be able to do this.
Well, we thank you too. And we thank Talmadge and his family for putting this story out there and you know, for his service and his sacrifice for our country. You know, it's us that's grateful for the service that they provided during World War II. Well, his service, 30 something years of service, you know, that's something to be said, you know, that long in the service. A lot of these guys, you know, with the stuff that they went through, and when they made it home, you know, a lot of these guys, well, not a lot, you know, there's quite a few of them that just decided to hang it up and go back to the civilian life. But it sounds like he stuck it out and, you know, went through 30 some years of service. You know, that's amazing.
It really is. And, you know, anyone that does get this book, they will enjoy. Everyone that I have, I give one to my neighbor that was in World War II. I had one ordered from Amazon and delivered to my step-grandfather, Frank Prinky, in Michigan, and he read it that day, then put it down. Everyone that has read it has enjoyed it. They couldn't put it down. They had to read it right away.
Well, I hope everyone that listens to this podcast takes a minute and gets a copy of it and sits down and reads it. And hopefully, you know, give us some feedback on what their thoughts are.
Oh, absolutely. I had a couple people on Instagram. They made comments of the book that's read it. You know, not everyone has Instagram, but once you read the book, you're more than welcome to comment on the Instagram page or the Facebook page.
Yeah.
Either one.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got you hooked up on Facebook now, so you should get a lot of attention.
Yeah, it's funny. I've never had social media until I started this book. So this is a life changer in more than one way, you know, for me.
I bet it is. Well, Tim, I really appreciate it, sir. You know, I appreciate you taking the time, you know, that you took to write this and help write this, you know, this book and the other folks that played a part in it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Stories of Sacrifice, World War II, American, POW, MIAs in the Philippines. This has been a production of the U.S. POW MIA Family Locating. You can find us on the web at uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and given in the best intention. Overall, the POWMIA accounting community is doing what it can with limited resources. It is our hope additional federal funding will be provided, along with additional partnerships established to disinter and process the remains of our unknowns located in the national cemeteries. You can help by contacting your congressional representatives and asking that they implement a DNA lead policy for those unknown POWMIAs. Thank you for listening.
I haven't really woken up until I've had my McDonald's breakfast deal. And I know this is true because before breakfast, I put my phone in the refrigerator and couldn't find the keys that were already in my hand.
Nothing gets the morning going like the first sip of an iced coffee. Get any size and any flavor for 99 cents until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's, I'm loving it.
The moment you realized you were mistaking your kids for coworkers.
Okay, team, I'm taking my 15 now.
Taking 15 what?
Was the moment you knew it was time to get back to work. Let's job it up. At CareerBuilder, our simple, customizable search tool lets you search for part-time, full-time, and even work-from-home jobs, so you can find a job that fits your lifestyle. Get started now at CareerBuilder.com.